guys. Welcome to the last episode of Deconstruction January. If you're just joining us, welcome. This is the last episode of this themed month, but don't worry, we're going to talk about deconstruction year round. I just wanted to make sure that we had a solid month to talk about it like we did with the inner child stuff. And so if you missed it last week, or actually 2 weeks ago, we talked about mega churches, and we did a two-part episode where I did a really deep dive into mega churches and all of their toxicity. And this week we're back to another really requested topic, purity culture. So if we're going to talk about purity culture, you know, we're going to have trigger warnings. So trigger warning for religious trauma, purity culture, soul tie trauma, marital abuse and rape, consent violations, church trauma, peer pressured emotional trauma, coercion, manipulation, sexual abuse, assault, abuse of power, sexism, and a brief mention of suicide. And if you guys are looking for more deconstruction content that isn't in this episode, you can always check out my TikTok. I post almost daily with deconstruction stuff. And as always, if this isn't the episode for you this time with all the trigger warnings, don't worry about it at all. If you are going to listen to this episode, I hope you feel validated and encouraged in your trauma with purity culture. Enjoy. Hi all, and welcome back to Mindful Minds. Thank you guys so much for joining us today. Today we're going to be talking about deconstruction. We are still in our deconstruction month, and two weeks, we talked about mega churches and the ableism and the capitalism and so much of other, you know, problematic stuff. And so this week we're going to be talking about purity culture with Sarah LaCour of At Deconstructing Purity Culture. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I have followed your account for a while, and I had you on my list of people that I wanted to come on for, like, I think, like, probably since I started the podcast. I had that on the back burner of, like, I really want to have the conversation with you specifically.
Thank you.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that you, I was just scrolling through Instagram yesterday trying to formulate the outline, or not yesterday, this was like last week, trying to formulate the outline and figure out like how I wanted this conversation to go. And we were just talking about how our outline is massive, because I was going through your Instagram and I was like, oh fuck, these are so many good ideas. Like, there's so much stuff to talk about. Like, purity culture is massive and it's so problematic.
It's crazy.
And so we're going to dive into as much as we can today. And with that being said, it is a really, really massive topic. It's been around for so long. It has evolved so much. And so even what used to need to be talked about that maybe harmed people who are in their 20s and 30s, they have adjusted. And now it's harming people who are in like their teenage years. It's harming them differently. And so even the conversation is like still like constantly evolving, and there's more things being added to the list of like how they're adjusting their narrative and their language to kind of still creep in, but do it in a way that's maybe less like obvious, I guess.
Angry.
Yeah. Which we'll talk about that as well. We wanted to talk about a little bit about what purity culture looks like in 2022 compared to, for me, I was experiencing it in like 2006 to 2016 ish. Like, that was kind of my range, and it does look different now. it does look different now. So we're going to talk about that as well. But to start off, for those of you who don't know Sarah and don't know her page, do you want to give a little bit of background on yourself and then why you chose deconstructing purity culture?
Sure. So I'm Sarah. I run the Instagram account called Deconstructing Purity Culture. And I grew up in the church. I grew up in like a mega church, basically. It wasn't a mega church when we started going there, and it grew into a mega church, which was really interesting. But I grew up going to school there as well. And so,
oh my God, I did too.
Yeah.
That was my exact same experience.
All angles. It was a like, there was no escape until high school. And I went to like the big public school for high school, and then really like it freaked me out. And I went to a small private Christian college for undergrad.
That was me too.
I'm glad to know we had the same experience.
Very similar backgrounds. Yeah.
Yeah. That was, I got hit with purity culture in like late 90s, early 2000s. So really at the height of like True Love Weight, Silver Ring thing, like all the like really gross capitalistic kind of stuff. And so I went to physical therapy school, and that's what I do now during the day. And then on the evenings and weekends. I like run this Instagram account. And so as I was like beginning my own deconstruction journey, kind of, I realized how intertwined purity culture and my body and all of that kind of stuff was like together. And I realized that I couldn't really separate them. Like there was so much to unpack from purity culture that impacted like pretty much every area of my life. And so it was something that I like kind of started talking about with friends, like in really like hush hush kind of like, I had this weird experience. And the more I was like talking to people about it, they were like, I went through the same thing. I also had to go through a ceremony and, you know, pledge my virginity to my dad and get a ring and all this kind of stuff, which is so gross.
That's like the weirdest part about it for me, honestly. Yeah.
It's disgusting. So I thankfully I realized like I was not alone, and just the fact that like my friends and I were talking about it and mm-hmm. kind of bringing some stuff to the light that we had thought was just something that like our own individual churches were going through or like our own denominations or whatever it was right. really helpful to just talk about it all and have people be like, no, I went through that too. I understand. This is something I also struggle with. And so I decided to like make an Instagram account and just kind of put everything that I was like rambling and thinking about and learning about, like, and especially put a lot of the data that I was finding behind it and hopefully help people feel like less alone in going through this kind of journey together. And especially just detangling and deconstructing like both faith and purity culture and the American evangelical church. And
yeah,
it has been very wild to see yeah. how much it's grown. I really did not expect that at all for it to like grow as much as it has, but it's been really cool to see and also just a little overwhelming.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Can I ask, I have two questions for you. So first okay. question, are you comfortable sharing what denomination you grew up in?
Yes. So it's complicated.
Okay.
Because that's what American evangelicalism is. So the church grew up at was non-denominational.
Okay.
But then my family switched over to like a Southern Baptist church, which
okay.
surprisingly was not as harmful and
interesting
and a lot healthier than the non-denominational church. I think just because they had some oversight. I mean, now with the SBC, it's a little different, but at least at the time it was helpful to have like a denominational kind of oversight. The other church mm-hmm. did not. And so they could kind of do whatever they wanted, and they did. Yep. And so it was kind of a mix of all of that.
Yeah. I just had someone comment on a TikTok of mine where I was explaining, I get a lot of comments and I talk about this quite a bit, but I get a lot of comments constantly where mm-hmm. it's either the classic, like, oh yeah, one church harmed you and you write off all Christianity, yeah. or the maybe less intense response of like, I'm so sorry that church hurt you. Have you tried X, Y, Z?
Yeah.
As like yeah. some sort of, which I really do think those people think they're being helpful.
Yeah.
But I also think it takes, and we've talked about this on the podcast a lot in deconstruction conversations and religious trauma conversations mm-hmm. of
yes.
the fact that evangelical Christianity sets you up from a very young age to think that you have all the information in the world and therefore yep. gives you a pride complex like nobody's yep. business. And so
right.
you walk into situations. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you walk into situations and you see someone on TikTok expressing mm-hmm. their trauma and you think you have the right to tell them
yeah.
why their trauma isn't right or why if yeah. they did X, Y, Z, it would be better.
Yeah.
But I just had someone comment, you should really try non-denominational churches. Like, if you had a problem with like Assemblies of God, and I was like, and they were like, they're a lot more like progressive. And I was like, false.
For sure
that's
not,
not yeah. what that means.
Not.
And I literally commented back and I was like, hey, so like, thanks for the suggestion. That's not what non-denominational means.
Yeah.
Non-denominational just means that they're not under a denomination, which normally means they don't have any type of like oversight or accountability
oversight.
Or board
yeah.
members or
yeah.
organization looking over them. And so what that can mean is progressive. That can mean
yeah.
that if you're non-denominational and you don't find a denomination that you feel like fits with your values and mm-hmm. you want to have gay pastors and you want
yeah.
to have conversations about evolution. And like,
yeah.
I went to a non-denominational church that like half of the worship team was gay and like they had that's conversations awesome. About how none of them believed in creation. And like, I was like, that's just rad.
Yeah.
But that's not what most non-denominational churches are like.
Yeah.
And so I just had someone suggest that. And it kind of hit me like, oh fuck, is that why so many people are falling into this trap of like thinking that non-denominational is their way out or their way out of the harm, when in reality it's normally more harmful. And the thing that comes to my mind is like my background with church, our pastor, I went to Assemblies of God, same thing, grew up in the church, school was adjacent, like same parking lot. And the pastor got kicked out for 30 accounts of sexual misconduct. There was a whole thing, like the ministry network got involved. It was this huge like thing. And we found out the church had been burying it for like 4 years. It was massive. It was like this huge deal. It like made the news like in our town. Like it was a really big deal.
Wild.
And he then went, he lost his license at Assemblies, like for Assemblies of God.
Yeah.
And he then went and started a non-denominational church 10 minutes away from the campus that he had pastored for like 10 or 12 years. And it's thriving. And
is it Mark Driscoll?
It's not Mark Driscoll, but like it's very like very similar vibes. And I will tell you something off camera later about that that I don't ever share the name or the location, but that's an interesting comment. And I'll carry on with that with you in a moment. I'll share. So my other question for you is, do you still consider yourself a Christian?
That is a really tough question. I don't know. Okay. I don't know where I'm at. My husband and I go to a very progressive church right now, and it's been very, very healing. Like for my own religious trauma, my husband did not grow up as like kind of religious, but it wasn't as restrictive as mine was. And so he definitely does not carry around as much religious trauma or like baggage that I do, which is nice. I'm very jealous of that. But so we found this church that is like very, very progressive, very like openly affirming. They talk a lot about deconstruction. They like openly embrace deconstruction and doubts. And in general, the pastor has been very open to just saying like, you can doubt whatever you want, you can believe whatever you want, like I'm here if you have questions and I can give you my perspective, but if you need other like resources, I can help you find those or help you find kind of like what you're looking for. So it's been very, very healing to just feel like I can come in and like be myself and say I don't know where I'm at with any of this, but I'm here for right now, and it feels like a good place to be because I can like openly ask questions and not have them be treated with like a like, how dare you doubt? Because that's the thing about, especially non-denominational churches, is that nuance really isn't a thing. It's very discouraged. And it's just a lot of black and white thinking to begin with, which like also ties into purity culture. But I've been doing a lot of work with Church Clarity, which is wonderful. And we basically just, it's churchclarity.org, I think, but they take information from like people submit churches like all over the country, and we go and look at their website and their sermons and all these kind of things and score them based on whether or not they're LGBTQ affirming and women in leadership. And so
That's fantastic.
It's really cool. So like especially if you're like moving someplace, or if you're looking for a place to like even just talk to a pastor that you think might be able to like answer some questions, or just openly say, I have a lot of questions and I don't know where I'm at. It's really helpful. And it's been extra helpful to see the non-denominational churches, honestly, that are like not actually saying what they believe and kind of hiding it in sermons and stuff. So I don't know. It was, it's felt very validating, honestly, to be like, okay, I wasn't the only one that went through this, and the black and white thinking is like a thing all across the board.
And we were just talking recently about the fact that like it's very, I don't know, that it can be very tricky with mega churches specifically, I think, because there is a really common like, I don't know, they're not blunt with the way that they believe things a lot of the times, especially like modern evangelical churches that are kind of the more trendy ones. They will be very discreet and very sneaky and very like, I don't know, like intentional about the way that they word things.
They don't so want to say.
No, they're not black and white about it. It's very just like, oh, this is like, we love everyone. But like, then you find out it's not a hospitable environment for like these groups of people. And so I think that whole thing just becomes really, I don't know, it becomes really controversial and hard to deal with. And on a total side note, I had just, I had just Googled Mars Hill for something because I was going to mention something. I did not fucking know that Rob Bell founded Mars Hill.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
I did not know that.
Wait, isn't it different? I think it's a different Mars Hill.
Is it a different Mars
Hill? I think it's a different Mars Hill than Mark Driscoll Mars Hill. I'm pretty sure because
I'm going to look it up.
I think it might be two different ones.
Oh, A Tale of Two Mars Hills.
Yes, it's a different one.
Oh my God. Because, how awkward.
Yeah, because that was like a really big issue when the Mark Driscoll Mars Hill was shutting down and the Rob Bell Mars Hill was like, no, no.
Not us. Oh my God, that's so funny because I was like, wait, what the fuck? Like, is that, did he, like, and if he did, how incredibly awkward to like create a monster.
I know, seriously.
That's so horrifying.
Okay, I don't know what his new church is called.
Mark Driscoll's?
Yeah, but it's thriving and it's, and they're about to do a series on relationships or something. They've been posting billboards everywhere apparently.
Lovely. Let's just Google that so that people know. So that people know what church not to go to. Trinity Church. It's called Trinity Church.
It's in like Arizona.
It is in, let's see. Yeah, Scottsdale, Arizona.
Yep.
So be aware.
Online, he has rented out a bunch of billboards that talk about like spicing up your like married sex life. And he's trying to be that like edgy pastor again.
Is it by abusing people? Is that the spice?
I think so. I think so. Just a smidge.
Is it just abuse?
Yeah. But like with a fancy name.
That's crazy. Yeah. No, my, to be as discreet as possible, my experience with my home church, our ex-pastor took a relatively similar approach where he, not the like spice up your sex life thing, but the, he was trying to revamp his image afterwards by having multiple pastors at his new church who have also been accused of sexual misconduct all have like some like home together where they will all like congregate, and they like, some of them are now on staff, and it's like this weird, like just in that church like, alone, there are I want to say four different men who I know, three of which have been accused of misconduct publicly. One, it was a lawsuit. One, it was to the other two, very public record. One was private record that I'm aware of because I went to the same church as this individual and I have spoken to the survivor of the situation.
Oh,
so created like a creepy ass little like commune of abusers.
Like gone rogue.
Yes. And then started like his whole like revamping his image under the idea of my reputation is bad, but like your reputation will be bad if you love Jesus. And that was which it was like this crazy ass like PR campaign.
Oh my God.
And he stayed like underground for like 9 months, like after all the shit happened, kind of let it die down.
Let everyone forget about it.
And then let's see, probably like I would say 80% of my church believed that he didn't do it right off the bat. And then I would say that probably about 50% or more left to follow him.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I left the second I found out it happened. I literally told my parents, I said I was 19. I was 19. And I told my parents, I said, I will never set foot in this church again. And I was like, I don't care if you guys go to Christmas services or Easter services, you will never see me in the church again. Never again.
That's a great decision.
I just backed up, stopped going, and then started releasing blog posts about them. And very quickly got a call from the head pastor. Hey, like pipe the fuck down. in a very not that kind of language. It was a very like, can we meet for coffee?
Yeah.
Like, can you talk it out? And I was like, no.
Meet for coffee.
No, we can't.
No, I'm good. Thanks.
Yeah. And this wasn't the head pastor who had committed the misconduct. It was the replacement head pastor who was trying to do some PR, you know, like
trying to bury it again.
Yeah, first aid on his like PR, trying to like,
oh my God.
Protect everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyways, let's dive into purity culture because we've gone we've far off topic here. Okay, so for those of like for people listening who maybe didn't grow up in religious environments or had no idea that there's a name for the abuse that they experienced related to like sex and purity, do you want to give a little bit of a crash course in what purity culture is?
Yes, sure. So when I always like to make the distinction that when I talk about purity culture on my account, I am speaking specifically about like the white American evangelical church, because I know a lot of predominantly non-white churches use the term purity and they use it in different ways. And so I don't ever want to, you know, give an example of something that doesn't apply to anybody other than just like basically white American churches.
Yeah, no, great distinction.
I also have heard from a lot of people in Australia and New Zealand that have said that this was like, they got all of their information from white American evangelical churches, but apparently it was really big in Australia.
Yep. I've heard that too.
Yeah. I think 'cause of Hillsong. Yep. So yeah,
very much so.
Yeah. So when I talk about purity culture in that way, it was the belief that like sex equates to your self-worth or your ability to be a good spouse or partner. There's a huge emphasis on virginity specifically. And it's very, very narrow in their view of sex and very shaming. And really, like, it started in the 80s and kind of went through the early 2000s in terms of, like, kind of the big push for purity culture that ended up getting into, like, even public schools because there was federal funding that was allocated to abstinence-only education. And so companies like True Love Waits and Silver Ring Thing capitalized on it, and they made it an industry. And individual states got to pick and choose, you know, kind of what they wanted to teach in terms of sex ed. And because there was federal funding allocated to abstinence only, that was like the majority of what most states kind of taught. And it still is like just a shit show across the board. There's no standardized sex ed to begin with, but a lot of that is just because there was like federal funding that ran out in the early 2000s. But like there was already big companies that had kind of capitalized on it and made it a full industry with like conferences and rings and balls and all that kind of stuff. And so it's very focused on virginity and avoiding all thoughts, like either sexual thoughts or feelings until a heterosexual marriage. And they throw in a lot of other stuff, like modesty and stuff like that, just for fun. But the biggest thing that I think a lot of people think of when they think of purity culture are the object lessons of like, if you have sex, you're going to be like this piece of tape that's not sticky anymore, or this like rose that's passed around and all the petals are off, or the tube of toothpaste. Like that was kind of the big thing in purity culture. It was like it was very, very shameful and like fear-based. And specifically like refused to teach any kind of comprehensive sex ed and stuff like that. So it's kind of a broad topic.
Yeah. No. And I mean, I'm glad that you ended on the sex ed, because that's literally what I wanted to go into next was let's just unpack some of the sex ed part, because I think one of the things that really shifted, actually, to be totally honest, the purity culture is the reason why I started to exit Christianity. Like I had started to exit Christianity because of purity culture before everything with the pastor happened. Like I had started to mentally kind of unpack some things and realize like, this is like, I don't know some of this. I don't understand some of this stuff that I think I should understand when I'm 18 years old. And there were some parts of like, I was learning a lot about trauma, because the listeners know this, and trigger warning for anyone who's listening that's new. I was sexually assaulted when I was 18 in college at a private Christian college. And so I was going through the investigation and going through like trauma healing and support group and like all of these different therapy aspects. And the purity culture thing had never quite hit me in the sense of like, what happens if you're raped? Like that had never really, cause I'd never applied it to myself. And a lot of times you don't think about things until they apply to your life. And so I started kind of viewing that, and it was like, well, wait a second. Like am I dirty and gross now because someone did something to me? Like, I don't really, I don't get this. And then the abortion conversation started to creep in where it was like, well, hang on. If I had gotten pregnant, I would have killed myself. Hands down, would have killed myself. And I was like, so is that, would killing myself have been better than like an abortion? Is that really how we're going to view things? And I started to just kind of being like, hey, hang on. Like, now that this applies to my life, I'm a little confused. Yeah. And then the everything with my pastor broke in 2019. Mm-hmm. Or no, 2018. I think it was late 2018. And I was trying to kind of figure all that out. And then I started to like feel a little confused with the sexual aspect of like, well, hang on. I don't agree with the way we're approaching rape. And I'd already started to dive into some like feminist texts because I was really pissed off about Donald Trump. And so I was like kind of slowly inching my way out. And I was like, okay, hang on. Like, none of this is making sense. And then that started to extend to, I took a human sexuality class and I had already started to do some sex ed education on my own because I was starting to become sexually active and like realize I didn't know anything. Even to the point of like, I was like, I don't know when I can get pregnant. I don't know like how that works. I don't know names for my body parts. I don't know. I didn't know I was supposed to get, like, I went and got my first STI test because I had been raped and I was like, oh shit, like I should probably get that done. And like, I had a doctor ask me a question about a certain body part and I like was like, I don't fucking know where that is. Like, fuck, like I don't know what part of my body you're referring to. And so I started following Instagram accounts that were sex ed Instagram accounts. And slowly got interested in like, okay, well, this is this and this is this, and like learning certain terms and like didn't know that like manual sex and oral sex are sex. And I was like, oh, like, oh shit, like I've had sex and I'm not like it. And I was like, oh damn. And then I dove into, I don't know if you've heard of August McLaughlin, but I came across her book Girl Boner, which is like Girl Boner, Good Girl's Guide to Sexual Empowerment. And it talks about it's so good. And I had the honor and privilege of having August on the podcast like last year. And literally that book, I like was reading about it and learning all these things. And the shame just started like whoosh. And I was like, oh, hang on. All of this was wrong. And it just was like, it wasn't a slow burn. It was an instant like, okay, I don't like this. And I'd always been a kid who was like, always kind of more of a sexual person, like had always like really like wanted to have sex even though I wasn't supposed to. And so then I read that book and I was like, well, I'm gonna buy a vibrator, fuck this shit, this is dumb.
There you
and
go.
I literally just like I hopped out of it real fast. Like it went from 0 to 100. I hopped on Bumble and I was like,
that's the way to do
first,
it
first, like literally very quickly was like, I'm having sex, like we're doing this.
There you go.
And I found someone, and at that point too, I had already I'd already done the consent education on my own. And that's so good. I entered the first time I had sex, it was like, it was great. There was no, I knew how to advocate for myself. I knew to tell the person beforehand, hey, I've been through sexual assault. Like this is kind of my background. It was like a fantastic experience. And that's it wasn't because I was married. It wasn't because I waited. It was because I had the education to advocate for myself and set boundaries and no red flags and have a safe sexual environment. It had nothing to do with marriage. And I walked away. I felt no soul tie. And I was like, oh my God, this was all bullshit. Are you kidding me? Like my brain exploded. And so with all of that being said, we can dive into some of the consent education. And then with your background in Christian college as well, we can dive in a little bit into the Christian college and sexual assault thing because you get a whole bunch of horny like 18 to 22 year olds who know nothing about consent.
There really was, I mean, one of the like hallmarks of purity culture even now is like a refusal to teach on consent, because there's this understanding, like, and I put that in very big quotes, of like, once you're married, you'll just always be consenting if it's your spouse, which is not true. And it was just one of those things. It was like, well, once you're married, it's this beautiful thing and you and your spouse will always be having sex and it's fine. And that's not the case. And so there there was no education on that to begin with. But then at the same time, there's also no education on body autonomy or saying no to even unwanted touching. Like if you don't want someone to hug you, you can say no. And there was never any of that like kind of education. But there is education on saying no to premarital sex. Like that's it. It's just don't do it. Like don't. And if someone's pressuring you, they're a bad person and you just need to tell them no. And that's it. And then you can walk away and like feel like a good Christian. And unfortunately, like that is how we're in the place that we are right now with the Southern Baptist Convention specifically, because they covered up, I don't even know how many years of like 700 some between like pastors and workers and all these people like that were on staff at churches abusing people.
God, I did not know that.
The SBC report is a fun read. But they like there, I think it ended up being like 700 some people, and it was over like 40 or 50 years, and they had essentially been keeping a secret list, like database. Yeah, it's a real fun read.
That's some cognitive dissonance if I ever heard. Oh my God.
Yeah. And like, because there's not even any teaching to kids about like, you're allowed to say no if somebody touches you and you don't want them to, and mm-hmm. and there's a refusal to even teach them the correct like anatomical body parts, then I mean, there's a ton of research out there that shows that like when you teach kids their like medically accurate terms, then unfortunately, if something does happen, they know what to tell you, and the chances of it being prosecuted and things like that are much, much higher. Mm-hmm. And if you teach kids to like that they're allowed to say no, the chance of that goes down a ton, like of even being in that kind of situation. And so it was such a weird like cognitive dissonance of of you have to say no to sex all the time until you're married, and then you're going to consent all the time, but we're not actually going to teach you like what the word consent means. Like I didn't learn any of that until PT school, I think. And
That's interesting.
Yeah, like I took anatomy classes like in high school, and so I learned a lot through just straight up anatomy classes, and it was at a public school. But at the time that public school, like the sex ed was, it was like, we assume you've already gotten the basics.
Yeah.
And so all of this, and all the sex ed was basically like, here's all just about STIs and, mm-hmm. and how, what they can do to you later on, basically. And so there was
which can also just be like a huge fear mongering thing with sex too. Like the way that 2000s and early 90s STI education, like the way they approached it was horrible.
Yeah. I mean, it was literally like Mean Girls, like who's like, you will get chlamydia and you will die.
You will die.
Yeah. That was pretty much my sex ed. Yep. And so like even by the time of high school, like going through anatomy classes, I was like learning stuff. And then going mm-hmm. into even at a small Christian college, I still was in like a health sciences program where we did have to learn about bodies and stuff. But it wasn't until physical therapy school where you have to learn about how like sexual health is part of overall health, and we had to learn about how to like talk to your patients about their sex lives and if they feel safe and if they're consenting, and you have to learn about like how to teach your patients who just had a hip replacement how to have sex again. Like it's all sorts of stuff that I was like,
well, and even like medical consent, like learning ethical like medical consent and stuff.
Yeah, I was like so unfamiliar with all of it that it felt like it broke my brain, like in PT school when I was finally learning all this stuff, and I was like, why did nobody teach me this? Like it was such a weird thing to learn that there was just this huge like lack of education that I just didn't get in school or otherwise. And it was just me like, you know, essentially ended up like Googling things and just trying to like figure stuff out before.
Thank God for Google.
For real. Thank God for the internet sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's the only reason why I haven't gotten pregnant. Like dead ass. Yeah. Because that's the only resource I had was like, if I put the condom on backwards, do I need to throw it away? Yes. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah.
Like, good to know. So you're like just seriously Googling.
Yes, literally. Like, and I think it's interesting too, because it's so often with women, I think mm-hmm. I really do think it impacts people who grew up in female presenting bodies, because and I think I really do think it impacts us more. I think it impacted like people who grew up in male presenting bodies as well, yeah. but a little differently, because I think there's still kind of this like weird locker room talk that can happen with men where they still maybe get some of the gist of it, but like sex 100%. Was so off limits to talk about as a girl that it was like, we weren't allowed to talk about it. Like the men would get conversations about porn at summer camps and the girls would get conversations about gossip or being a good wife. Like, so like we
or didn't about even... like not tempting the boys.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Or putting the blame on us, which we can get into that as well about how purity culture is rape culture and puts the blame on survivors. But I also want to backtrack really quick to the consent aspect, because two things. For one, I have noticed the more I've like dove into, because my consent journey started, I got assaulted. I started educating myself on consent. Also didn't learn what the word consent meant until I was like 18. Learned what the word meant out of pure survival and trying to like just figure out what the hell happened to me. And then learned about it in a sexual context first. Started looking at children's books that were about consent. Because I was like, let's go to the basics. Because I obviously don't know what the hell this is.
Very, very basics.
And then found out like that this also applies. Like consent is not just sexual. It can be, you know, the saying no to hugs and the respecting people's boundaries and the not bulldozing people when they say no. And then from there, I kind of started looking at my experience with like Christianity as a whole. And I was like, well, hang on. We also were taught that consent didn't matter in a spiritual context, because you would have people come up to you and pray over you without asking and put hands on you and get in your business without asking. There was a lot of just like, we're all one big family and we all have rights to one another's journeys and experiences and personal information. We all have a right to like, honestly, like touch anyone in any way. And I don't mean in a sexual way, but I mean in like a hugging people without consent or even like
if even you just like a hand on a shoulder and all that.
There's a lot of touching, and even in like a charismatic environment, if you think of like the someone's having a moment, which as an adult I now think are very manipulated, and for me it was mainly panic attacks that I didn't realize were panic attacks, 100%. But let's say someone's having some sort of like spiritual Holy Spirit moment in the middle of an altar call or the middle of worship, and the Hillsong song is at its peak and we're all feeling it. And someone walks up and they do the whole, all of a sudden you have 10 people around you praying for you. Or all of a sudden you have, I had a lot of people in my TikTok comments talk about getting pushed on the head, like that, like boom, Holy Spirit. All of those things, it just, there's like this assumption that if it's spiritual, people have a right to touch you and a right to your space and a right to your body without you ever giving them that. And I participated in this. I would go to people and put hands on them and start praying on them and like put my hands on their head and like hold their faces. And it's like, what? I was 15. Yeah. And did not have the right to do that.
Yeah. We had no other example though. Like I just had this conversation with a friend that did not grow up in a super religious like space. And cause I was telling her how like, it's only been within the past couple of years that I've realized that, and through so much therapy that like, I don't have to, like, I don't owe everybody my entire story. Like I don't have to tell people things if they're not safe people. Yep. And I don't have to tell them everything I'm struggling with and everything. And the fact that like so many of us, like you were seen as not being honest or not being open or not, you know, listening to the Holy Spirit or when he's prompting you. And if you didn't open up about everything and let people pray for you or allow yourself to be in that like very, very vulnerable position, it was seen as wrong. And so, and that's the worst thing you can be. Like, you just want to be in a like good standing with everybody. You don't want anybody to think all these things about you. Cause then you also know that they're, when they're praying for you in their, you know, prayer groups or whatever, it's just like gossip and just like, they just want to know what's going on and like, oh, Sarah's really struggling with this. But it was something that like,
point. I've never thought about prayer groups just being like gossip circles.
100%, 1000%. And like, it was just something I just thought was normal until a couple of years ago and like talking to my therapist and being like, yeah, I've like opened up to all these people that like aren't good friends. And she was like, you don't have to open up to everybody. And I was like, but I do.
Yeah. No, I had a very similar experience in therapy where I was an oversharer, like way, like to a degree that was like honestly not healthy. And I've even had to like reel back on the podcast of like deciding what I'm going to talk about and what I'm not going to talk about, because I kind of am still in the mindset of like, I owe everybody every explanation and every story and every trauma. And this year was the first year that I had a trauma that I literally was like, nope, we're not going to touch it. It's not going to go public. It will never go public. I'm talking, it's a personal thing between my therapist, my partner, and my friends. Like, that's it. And the other thing that I learned through just my assault journey with the giving people your story aspect was, when I first would share it, I felt like I had to share it on stage at church.
Yes.
I felt like
I remember like a nice little wrapped up bow of like,
yeah, I remember
I made it through it with God.
Yeah. I remember feeling really pressured to like share it on stage. And I remember I shared it once and tied it back to God. And I just re-listened to it because somebody had filmed it and I found it on my Facebook page and I was like, oh, like, I don't like that. That's how I ended that of like, but God, and I think I even said like, I'm, even though it was so horrible, I'm so glad it happened because it like brought me closer to God. And I was like,
oh my God,
that's a fucking lie. Like that is not true. And I also did not actually feel that way. Like, I know for a fact, I was in the corners of my bedroom crying, suicidal, like begging to die. Like, I did not, I'm not happy it happened. Like, I was like, that's such bullshit. And then I saw myself, I talked about it again, and I was way closer to deconstructing. And I approached it from a completely different perspective. And I remember kind of being really nervous because I didn't tell the church what I was going to talk about. And I went up and talked about it. And I was like, so like I went through sexual assault and like da, da da da. And, it was because I had started this support group at the church that they wanted to call it a life group. And I was like, it's a support group. This isn't a life group.
Yeah.
And we didn't talk about God. God had nothing to do with it. I would take prayer requests at the end and then that was it. And we'd do like a prayer, but it was literally all tactical therapy worksheets. It had nothing to do with God. And I remember saying on the stage, like, and so I started this support group at our church and it has nothing to do with God. And like, I realized that like scripture and prayer are not what got me through this. It was therapy and it was worksheets and it was the support of my therapist. And there's kind of this like scattered, like people kind of being like, do we clap? Like, that's a weird thing to say on stage. And then I got nervous. And at the very end, I was like, and Jesus brought me through it. Like, thank you very much.
Oh, God.
And was like, sorry, everyone. And literally.
Amen.
Like, yeah. And at like 4 or 5 months later, I left church permanently and then never went back because I was just like, okay, I'm too far on the edge of this where I don't actually believe that God's bringing me through it. And it also was pissing me off because people kept saying, well, God brought you through this. And I was like, no, motherfucker, I brought myself through it.
Exactly.
Like, this was me. This
me
was
and my therapist.
Me working my tail off and like breathing through panic attacks. Like, that was not God. And I deserve that credit. And I honestly got kind of like defensive and was like, well, this isn't fair. I worked really hard for this. And I called my dad out on it once. And it was a really funny conversation. Oh. He was like, and he would not care that I share this because he thought it was funny.
Good.
But I said, he was like, yeah, like, thank God that he brought you through it. And I said, no, thank Fina. Thank Fina that
there
Fina brought. And he started laughing and he goes, okay, thank Fina. And then he goes, and also God. And I was like, okay, we can do an and also. Like, I will accept that. That's fine.
Sure.
But yeah, it's interesting how I think that there's the consent goes so much further than sex. It goes
does,
to,
yeah.
we have a right to your story. We have a right to your body. We have a right to your space. Yeah. We have a right to your emotions. And boundaries just don't exist. They just
don't
exist.
And because of that, there's no even like atmosphere of just like letting a hard thing be hard and not wrapping it up with like a God bow at the end. And that's been something that's been really helpful to learn through a lot of therapy is just that like sometimes a hard thing is just going to be hard and years later you can look at it or months later or whatever it is and say like that was a really hard time in my life and we're through it now, but in the moment it is I just remember it always feeling so dismissive anytime I would mm-hmm. share my story with somebody or even say like a hard thing I was going through and have people just be like, oh, but God's going to bring you through it. He's already working through it. He's, you know, he's sending these people or he's doing this or look at how he orchestrated this. And just a lot of like the Christianese like language. Mm-hmm. And I just remember like even when I was still like very like deep in church culture and all that kind of stuff being like, yeah, but this is still hard. Like this is still a thing that I'm going through that I don't like, I was not seen like saying those things. Yeah, like
craving
things.
That like, validation, like wanting someone to validate yeah, your feelings.
To just say like, this is hard and that sucks and I'm sorry. Yeah. And that's not something that Christians do well, if at all.
Yeah, no, I was a big, God gives his tough battles to his strongest soldiers.
Oh,
which if you're listening and I ever said that to you, I'm so fucking sorry.
Same. Because
I have literally reached out to some people that I know for a fact I was with them during a traumatic event, and I have reached out to them privately and been like, hey, I was so dismissive to you and I'm so sorry. Yeah. I was just parroting what I had heard, but I'm so sorry because like you were a child and you were going through trauma and I was a child and I was trying to help you and I did it so wrong and I'm so sorry because you deserved validation and you got like dismissal.
And like we work off of like we do the best with what we know at the time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the hard thing is that like my parents are still very in like deep in kind of the evangelical world. And I just like my therapist reminds me too, like they're doing the best with what they know. Like mm-hmm. they're doing the best with like the information that they have and the information that they're willing to look at. And if they're not the safe people to have these conversations with, then you have the other safe people that are. But like at the time that we were like going through it, it was like, at least I was an only child and didn't have any other siblings to like like look at or anything. And so I was like, I literally was just doing the best with the only information that I had until I found the internet and
yeah, no, literally
had to figure stuff out.
Yeah. And even me and my sibling, I have an older sister who's 3 years older than me, and then I have a baby sister who's 10 years younger than me, and so she was really disconnected from all of it with us.
Yeah.
But me and my older sister were going through the thick of it together, and funny enough, we actually deconstructed really close together. Like we both, I was 19 and she was 22 and we were doing it at the same time. And then I told her officially that I was leaving the church when I was 20 and I was going to make an announcement. And then I waited cause I was at a Christian college and I was like, I'm going to get kicked out. So I need to wait until I graduate, until I get that degree. Yeah. And then I'm like, boop, peace out.
Yeah.
And so I waited until I was 21 and had graduated college. And then I publicly announced it. And then my sister very soon after was like, hey, I'm also going to tell mom and dad that I'm leaving. I was like, okay, cool.
Good.
But yeah. And I do want to tie back to, cause it's one of the things that I wanted to make sure that we hit.
Yeah.
When we talk about the sex education, I wanted to make sure mm-hmm. that we mentioned the two things, the soul ties, mm-hmm. because I want to talk about that. And then the other part is that when you're married, there's mm-hmm. this expectation that sex is going to just come naturally. And that you're going to know how to do it. You're going to know all the logistics. You're going to know how to use protection. You're going to know how to X, Y, Z. And you don't. And so when you get married, and a lot of the times when you're in evangelical Christian circles, you get married when you're fucking 20 years old. So you get married and you get married really young. And then you still don't know how to have sex. And then there's often still sexual assault and abuse in marriages because there's the expectation that if you're married, your partner essentially owns you and gets to do whatever they want with you. So do you want to dive into a little bit of that first, and then we can maybe dive into the soul ties after?
Yeah. I'm married and my husband and I have been together for forever, but we got married when I was 22, about to turn 23, and he was 25. And part of like the timing was just because of PT school. It was like we'd been together like all through undergrad, and he's 4 years older than me. And so we were long distance for most of it. And he was in the military for a second. And so it was like the weirdest like timing ever. But I was like, we were so young. We were babies. And we, up until the point that we like got married, every time we made out or like went past making out or like broke any kind of boundary that basically the church had like set for us, we felt so guilty and we were like made to feel guilty, but you also couldn't talk about it. Like, we could talk about it to each other, but you couldn't talk about it to anybody else because that was bad. And and you don't want to, like, a sexual sin was the worst kind, apparently. And so it was just something that was like this weird, like, secret shame. And so then we get married, and I remember telling him, like, I think it was like we were on the way to like our honeymoon or something. And I was like, it's so messed up that, like, yesterday afternoon sex was bad, and now all of a sudden sex is this good thing that everyone expects us to be doing all the time, and we're supposed to know everything and figure it out. And it was the weirdest, like, it was like, you can't flip a switch, you can't just decide, okay, this is what we're going to do now. You don't know anything. You don't know how to talk about your body because you haven't had any sex ed. You don't know how to tell your partner what feels good and what doesn't because you haven't had any sex ed and you haven't had any experience up until that point. And when all of your sexual experiences leading up to that are filled with shame and filled with, like, we weren't supposed to be doing that, that was bad, that was wrong, your brain doesn't know the difference. Like, your brain doesn't know that now you have a ring on your finger, and so it's, like, legal now. Your brain just knows that, like, you've conditioned yourself up until this point to think that this is bad and wrong, and that feeling any kind of sexual pleasure is bad and wrong. And so it takes a long time to, like, untangle that. And thankfully, like, I'm thankful that I was, like, in therapy at the time, and so I could bring it up to my therapist and, like, figure it out with her and figure out why it was such a, like, issue for me. But at the time, it literally felt like I'm the only one going through this. Like, right. It must only be me. Why is this such an issue? And then now I read all these studies that have come out in the past, like, 10 years that talk about, you know, people that are raised with, like, I think they call them, like, restrictive sexual values is kind of how it's phrased in the literature, but have higher rates of, it's not called vaginismus anymore. It's called, like, dyspareunia, I think, which is just painful sex or involuntary contraction of your pelvic floor muscles, and higher rates of, like, just painful sex in general, but also higher rates of people saying they're dissatisfied with sex, or rates of feeling like you, like, unwanted sex and stuff like that. And so that now there's, like, actual data behind it saying, hey, this is not the way to teach about sex, by saying, don't do it, don't talk about it, don't think about it, feel guilty every single time you think about it until you're married. Like, there's so much data and science behind it saying, like, don't do that, this is bad. And yet it still is being talked about. Like, very recently, I saw a video the other day where a couple was talking about it and was just, like, basically talking about how they, anytime they kissed, they felt like they were, like, breaking boundaries. And so they shouldn't have kissed before they got married. And it was like, gosh, like, well, there's just no pleasure ever.
No. And it's not, it doesn't make sense to expect people to be able to do that crossover in the way, I don't know, it's not realistic in my opinion. I think that I experienced vaginismus both due to trauma and due to shame, and you aren't educated on what that even is. So once again, that was a Google diagnosis for me, that I figured it out via Google. And then was like, oh fuck. Like, okay, I think this might be a problem. And it just all is, I don't know, it creates this environment. And there's also weird, like, once you cross that boundary of having a ring, then all of a sudden, like, everyone talks about sex really openly. And there's that weird,
and in, like, the weirdest ways.
Yeah. In, like, a really, like, pervy way. Yes. Like, it gets really pervy and really, like, overly sexual and honestly, like, inappropriate. Like, and once again, there is no boundary and everyone thinks they're entitled to your life. And so I've seen people go through marriage where then all of a sudden it's like, hey, like, we're all going to talk about sex in a really open way that honestly is kind of inappropriate because you didn't present this to us. We are asking you questions that are inappropriate. And it's like, oh, like, hang on, like, that's not really how this should work. You shouldn't just you shouldn't feel entitled to my sex life just because I have a ring now. That's not how that works.
I would say it's what a lot of, like, Christian influencers, like, couples are doing now, is talking a lot about sex in, like, either never saying sex
Yep.
And saying a lot of other like euphemisms or taking questions from their like audience and who is clearly like, you know, young people that are like kind of in the same boat of having no sex ed. And they're basically trying to answer sex ed questions without any like real information and going like way overboard or just like never really giving any details, but being like, it's beautiful. So you should do it. It's the like smoking hot wife thing of
yep.
Where the, like pastors weird... will just say they have smoking hot wife and they have sex all the time, but like only because they're married. And it's so icky.
It's very weird. And it's also very weird from a perspective of like, I don't know. That always is a youth pastor thing too. And like, I don't know why the fuck you're talking about why you want to fuck your wife in front of a whole bunch of teenagers, but like, it's weird and it'll never not be weird.
Yeah. And telling them that like, you better not feel any of these feelings, but you can when you're married, like, but don't feel them until then.
it doesn't make any sense. Do you want to go in a little bit about how the lack of education and the lack of consent and the lack of, just comprehensive sex ed can then contribute to the abuse and the sexual assault in marriages specifically?
Yeah. So, I mean, in general, like when you, the phrase, like when you know better, you do better is very true. And so a lot of, especially young Christian couples, and there's a ton of like data behind this as well now that, without any kind of sex ed and the only sex ed either being provided by a pastor or books like Mark Driscoll's weird book about sex and and other like Christian books about sex, there in most of them there is no actual sex ed. There's just a the like prevailing theme is women take longer to like heat up is what they always say, and men can just do it anytime. And it's also very like binary language. So I'm just using that because that's what they all say. But it's this weird narrative that women don't like sex and they just have to put up with it. And men do like sex and they want to do it all the time. And so you just kind of, it's like your duty as a Christian wife, essentially. And it gets framed like that a lot of times, like even at women's like conferences, and it gets framed as like, it's your duty as a good Christian wife to have sex with your husband, because if you don't, he'll find it somewhere else. And you don't want him to do that. You don't want him to leave you, or you don't want him to look at porn or, you know, even talk to a woman. Like, that would be bad. And so it unfortunately leads to like domestic abuse, big trigger warning. It leads to like marital rape, which I did not know was a term until like PT school. It leads to people just having like very, very painful sex because their partner doesn't think they need to learn anything, or they don't think they need to learn anything. And so they're just trying to figure stuff out and it's not working and it's very painful. And also just in general, so like I'm a physical therapist and we work with a lot of pelvic floor patients. And I mean, when your pelvic floor muscles that kind of hold your like urinary system and all like everything inside of you, when those completely like involuntarily contract and stay contracted, then you're not getting anything in there. Not a tampon, not, you know, anything for penetrative sex, like nothing. And so it can become really painful when you just try to force it. And that's what unfortunately a lot of people do. They just, there's this narrative of like sex is supposed to hurt. And so you just have to get over it and deal with it. And eventually it will get better. And oh, as you get older, you'll get better at sex together and you'll figure it out. But we don't ever want to teach you how to talk about it or how to tell your partner what you like and don't like, or how to even learn anything about yourself. Because there's also at the same time, this focus to, especially like, men, like young men in youth group, especially, or like people that were like socialized as male, of like, don't ever masturbate, don't touch it. But to women, it's like, don't ever possibly, you know, like look attractive because you'll be tempting the boys, and don't ever think any sexual thoughts. So it's just we're both getting it in like very different ways, but most marriage books, like Christian marriage books, unfortunately have that very binary like view of women just don't want sex and men do. And so you just have to deal with it. And unfortunately that has led to like a lot of assault and abuse. And I get messages from women like every day, and men too. I get messages from a lot of people that say that like that was their marriage. Like they just thought they were supposed to get married at 18 or 19. And so they did, and then realized like that their husband thought they were supposed to have sex every night or every other night, and it was painful and hard, and then they realized they didn't have to do that anymore. And so it's heartbreaking that is the reality of what a lot of especially like conservative evangelical churches are teaching, or even like refusing to teach anything about sex or bodies. But what they're doing is ending up teaching things that kind of empower abusers in general. And that's kind of how we end up where we are with different denominations going through this.
Yeah. And I think the thing that's really interesting too, so I was just checking on my computer really quick because I wrote a reflection paper in college in my human sexuality class, and I was trying to find if I had any stats about the abuse and the pleasure and marriage when it comes to not having sex education and shame. And I know I have it somewhere, but I can't find it. But I did find this quote. And if any of the listeners, I've plugged this book so many times because I think it's so fucking good. But if you haven't read Jessica Valenti's The Purity Myth, it's amazing. But this is a quote from that book. Consider the implications virginity has on the high school girl who is cruelly labeled a slut after an innocuous makeout session. The woman from a background so religiously conservative that she opts to have her hymen surgically reattached rather than suffer the consequences of a non-bloody bedsheet on her wedding night. Or the rape survivors who's dismissed or even faulted because she dared to have past consensual sexual encounters. And she also has an article called No Such Thing as Virginity. That's another really good article. But there's just kind of, from such a big lens, it's so unhinged to me that we're placing this much importance on something that is just not that important, to be totally like blunt. And it doesn't just cause shame. Like you mentioned, like it can literally cause physical symptoms in your body that cause pain. Like we're not just talking, and that's not even saying that pain is being caused from premarital sex. Like that can be, you're married, you did what you're supposed to do, you waited until marriage, you were the perfect little pure girl, and then you get to your wedding night and you have vaginismus and your muscles are contracting and it's not pleasurable. Yeah. And I was just a really funny pop culture example of this. If you've ever watched Gilmore Girls.
Yes.
And you listen to Lane, Rory's best friend, talk about sex. The whole show, her mom is super conservative. They're a Christian family, and they
like Seventh-day Adventist.
Yeah, but not.
I don't know why I remember that.
but not evangelical Christianity. But they, incredibly religious, incredibly conservative, and it's very evident from the very beginning of Mrs. Kim and her daughter Lane's interactions that purity is very important, and obviously following the rules. You see everything with Lane, like she has to follow the rules, and she's rebelling in every other aspect. And the thing that I think is so interesting, we watch her have a whole closet dedicated to rock music and makeup and other outfits, but the one thing that she doesn't bend on is sex. It's the one thing she never crosses that line. She hides rock music, she moves in with two boys. She goes on tour and like is a drummer in a rock band. Like she crosses every other boundary and breaks every other rule and rebels against everything else her mom tells her to do except for the sex. That's the one thing that like sticks in her head above all else. And then she gets to her wedding night and her sex is painful. And she explains, oh my God. And it's an amazing scene if you look at it from like a psychological perspective. But she gets to her wedding night and she's talking to Rory after she's had sex, and they come back from like Mexico or wherever they were on their honeymoon. And she comes back and tells Rory, I can't believe all of you guys have been agreeing to just like pretend like sex was fun. Like this is the most like unhinged, huge, elaborate scheme I've ever heard of. And she literally thinks that all women have lied for hundreds of years and said that sex is pleasurable and fun because she has so much shame that it wasn't fun for her. It was probably painful. She also mentions that she had sex on a beach, which, like, that's a bad plan as well.
Not a great idea.
And so she has literally convinced herself that every single woman in her life has lied to her that sex was pleasurable and that pop culture has lied, that it's this huge conspiracy theory. And she's convinced. Like, Rory's like, no, try it in a bed. Like, try it. Like, I really promise you it's better. And she's like, no. Like, one time was enough. Like, I get it. I did it.
That's what her mom says, too. Mm-hmm. I remember her mom says, like, before her wedding, she sits her down and she goes, some things are going to happen and you're not going to like it. And if you're lucky, you'll only have to do it once, like me.
Yep. And it's like, it's an interesting, and it's, you think it's dramatized.
It's not, but it's not. Not even a little bit.
No. Like, it's not dramatized at all. And I've watched, Gilmore Girls is one of those shows that I go back and I rewatch like every year. Like, I've literally watched it probably like 12 times.
I feel that.
And I watched it this year. And got to that scene and was like, oh my God, like, what the fuck? And it like hit me of like, that went so over my head as a kid because I kind of was like, oh, that's super dramatic. Like, that's goofy.
Yeah.
But I was also like, oh, go Lane. She waited until marriage. Like, I was like happy for her.
Yeah.
And it didn't hit me until this year that I was like,
oh no.
Guys, like, this is what we're talking about. And like, it seems dramatic and it seems goofy. And when you talk to someone who didn't grow up in an evangelical environment, they're like, oh, ha ha ha, like, that's so dramatic. And it's like, no, this is literally how we've been trained. This is what this is our lives. This is what we live.
Yeah.
This is the experience that all of these women have had and these young girls have had, where it is treated as that serious of a thing. And you are like, you do expect it. The pleasure is not sent. And I also had a whole thing on TikTok recently with a popular, like, Calvinist creator.
Cool.
And he duetted one of my videos where I talked about sexual assault as one of the reasons why I left the church. In said video, revealed that he had sexually assaulted someone. But
no.
It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. He duetted it and was like, the way he phrased it was so unhinged. He said, I also have made someone a survivor. And I was like, I'm sorry.
No, what? No.
And I was also like, pause. We are not on the same wavelength, bro. That wasn't what I was saying had happened. I have not made someone a survivor. Like, let's back up. And he proceeded to then, I called it out immediately because I was like, all right, if I'm going to get in a TikTok beef, this is what it's going to be.
Yeah.
So I called him out immediately, duetted him, and was like, this man just fucking admitted to a sexual assault on a TikTok. Yeah. Like, someone call 911. Like, are you kidding me?
Oh my God.
And he then proceeded to duet me back and have a whole conversation about assault and how he's been forgiven. And I just talked about this in the Mega Church episode about the fact that the forgiveness culture leads to systemic abuse because you can just forgive and forget and it's fine. And he specifically talked about in another one of his videos, him and his wife's relationship and the fact they both know that sex is always on the table, even if they don't want to do it, because they're trying to,
I think I know, like, who you're talking about.
They're trying to, like, answer the needs of someone, of their partner. And that it's like, it doesn't matter if they're not in the mood.
It's sinful if you say no.
Mm-hmm. And that was Mark Driscoll's whole MO, was him preaching the, like, if, like, it's biblical to give your husband a blowjob because, like, you're meant this to serve him. And we can kind of end, if we want to, on the whole women belonging to the church and to men, which is obviously perpetuated by the purity culture, purity contract.
Yeah.
I also had a contract that I signed with my father. Which, in hindsight, boy, oh boy, is that fucked up.
So I can't even believe.
I don't even really, I think if I were to have a conversation with my dad about it now, he would even understand why it's fucked up. Because I think that there was just so much stuff that you kind of just subscribe to and you don't think you just closely did it. You just do it.
And you're told it's important and and everybody else is doing
you're wanting to protect your kids, and from the perspective of the church, your child having sex before marriage is like the biggest nightmare of all time. And my parents had to have a very quick turnaround emotionally, because I went from the worship leader to, hey guys, I'm starting a podcast. I'm going to have sex educators on. I'm going to talk about my personal sex life. I have had sex. I've had a lot of sex. You probably shouldn't listen to the podcast. Yeah. And they were like, oh my God.
Don't Google me.
I was like, don't listen. Don't listen to the episodes. Yeah. I'll send you ones that are appropriate if you'd like to take a listen.
Yeah.
But for the majority, probably stay off. And, I know for a fact that they were doing what they thought was right to protect us. And I also understand how easy it is to buy into it because of how massive the system is. Yeah. But do we want to dive in at the very end of just like touching on the self-worth and the women belonging to the church and how harmful that is?
Yeah. I think a lot of us that went through purity culture and like had like a purity ceremony like we did, what like there was this weird emphasis on you had to sign the contract with your parents and like pledge to them somehow that you weren't going to have sex and that your parents were going to protect you from premarital sex or from like, you know, bad relationships and all this kind of stuff, which is not realistic just in general. But and again, like I also, you know, want to say that, you know, they were doing the best with what they knew at the time. And when it was, especially like the church that I was at, it was basically a mega church. And that's all they were hearing. That's the only information that they had. And this was also in like the early 2000s. So they didn't know how to, you know, see people that had disagreeing, like viewpoints on the internet. And a lot of times, like people in, I don't know, my parents are boomers, but like in that generation, it was like they went through the sexual revolution of the 60s and 70s. And that's a lot of what purity culture was birthed out of. But they saw, you know, themselves or their friends or people they know get hurt or get STIs or have unwanted pregnancies. And so I see like where it came from. And I see the general idea of like, we want to protect you from that.
Right.
But when it ends up getting tied to your worth as a person is it's necessary to like be a virgin on your wedding night to your like heterosexual spouse, it takes on a very different tone essentially, and does like promote this idea that as people who are like socialized as women, that we belong to a man, that we are less than men, and that we have to just kind of subscribe to that. Like we have to make sure that they don't leave us. And so we have to, you know, have sex or do all these things that they'd say that we don't want to do anyways.
Yeah.
And it ends up like perpetuating this idea that women can't, like, don't have any autonomy to begin with, especially in the church. So there, I don't know if you also got the same illustration that I got, which was like the umbrella thing. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, no, I got the from the purity culture object illustrations. I got the rose and I got duct tape.
Oh yeah. This was it wasn't necessarily specifically about sex, but it was about like the hierarchy. So it was like this weird picture. I'll have to send it to you because I was just talking to somebody about it. It's this weird picture of like a big umbrella that has like God on it, and then a smaller umbrella that has husband, and then a smaller umbrella that has wife, and then like the smallest umbrella has kids. And so it's like, if those are out of order, you'll get rained on or something. And so, which doesn't make any sense because it's still an umbrella, but it was, it was this weird idea of like, this is the hierarchy. The hierarchy is like God, husband, wife, kids. And so you just have to agree with that. Otherwise you're a sinful feminist who is clearly going to hell because you believe that women should have any kind of rights.
Yeah.
And like, it's so harmful. Like I can't even begin to describe how harmful it is, but it leads to kind of like you were saying before, like it leads to abusive relationships. It leads to assault. It leads to like marital rape and all these different things that,
like, even things that maybe aren't quite as dire, it still leads to unhealthy dynamics.
Yeah. And it leads to that lack of like boundaries that we were talking about and the just wanting to, you know, be a good Christian wife and wanting to model that for other people or model that for your kids and stuff like that.
Yeah, the people pleasing.
Yeah. And eventually it, I mean, especially if you're dealing with pelvic floor issues, like those lead to a lot of other physical mm-hmm. issues later down the road between like your bowel and bladder system. And so like there's physical effects at the same time, all because we're taught that like men have to be above us and we can't, you know, go out of order basically, otherwise somehow society will collapse. Like I don't know.
Yeah, what's the end? Like what happens?
I'm not really sure.
Yeah,
that's never, it's just like don't do it, like it's yeah, just bad.
Yeah. Yeah, and the funny thing too, I talked a bit about cults in the last episode because I was listening to a podcast. I was listening, Glenn and Doyle had Sarah Edmondson, who was in the NXIVM cult. Ooh. On to talk about NXIVM and the details and the red flags of cults, because I don't love the whole, I was talking about this in the last episode, I don't love the whole like let's dive into cults from like a let's entertain off of someone else's trauma.
Yeah,
but I do like yeah. it from the perspective of a hey, here's our red flag so you don't get in this.
Yeah.
And that's what this episode was Sarah just like warning people. And they were talking about the religious crossover, about like our religion's cult. And Sarah's go-to, I talked about this in the last episode, about the fact that I heard a quote that it was like, anytime someone asks for a certain percentage of your income, it's a cult. And I was like, oh, well, whoops. Well. but then there's also like Sarah mentioned the whole aspect of like, do you belong to someone else? Like, is it,
yeah.
is, and specifically with NXIVM, NXIVM's huge thing was they branded people. And so there was this kind of whole idea of like a red flag is if you do not belong to yourself, if you belong to someone yeah. else and you don't have that autonomy, that should be a wee, 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 like alarm yeah. going off, like start to evaluate whether or not this is a safe environment for you. And the other yeah. thing that she mentioned was if you leave, is there smoke? Because if there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah.
And the idea yeah. that like if you leave and you don't leave peacefully and quietly and you start to say, hey, this is what happened, and tell your truth and tell mm-hmm. what happened, and all of a sudden you're getting threatened and there's lawsuits and there's people trying to like shut you down, that's another red flag. And I started listening and I was like, check, check.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh fuck. And I think the thing that's super interesting with the autonomy as well is even the contracts, it all really boils down, not all, but a lot of it boils down to this lack of boundary, this lack of having mm-hmm. being oneself, like belonging to yourself, yeah. Having that autonomy. Because even the honestly, if we think about it from like a really like objective perspective, signing yourself away to someone else is similar to branding.
Yeah.
Those are on the same like spectrum. Yeah. And so I actually got tattooed on myself, I belong deeply to myself, post assault and then post deconstruction, because I was like,
yeah.
And funny enough, the My Life by Billy Joel became my theme song, because I was like, like, this is mine, leave me alone. And I would just sing it all the time, because I was like, this is all I have yeah. is like my tattoo and that. Billy Joel. And so I think that's one of the things, is if you're looking at your, even if you're listening to this and you're still very involved in religion, if you're looking mm-hmm. at your religious involvement and you don't feel like you belong to yourself, and that there is this yeah. disconnect where somewhere along the line you lost mm-hmm. ownership of yourself,
yeah.
maybe we look deeper, because that yeah. should be a red flag going off in your mind of, if you don't have ownership of yourself and your body,
yeah.
that should be a concern. Because
yeah.
at the core of anything, and in my opinion, this is far past religion, you shouldn't belong to anyone else, period. And I yeah. get that some people don't agree with that. I think you're wrong, but that's okay. But I think like at the very basis, even if you want to still dive, even if you still think that purity is a priority and you still think that sex is, you want to save it for marriage, yeah. I would just say like, look inward and look into, am I doing this because it's my yeah. choice and it's something that I want to do? Because I have nothing against people wanting to wait until marriage, yes. as long as they belong to themselves. It is an independent yes. decision. It's not because they feel like they belong to their partner. Yep. As long as you are in control of your own story there and you have ownership of yourself yeah. and your life and your body, literally, then like, if you still want to practice the abstinence and waiting till marriage
yeah.
and the purity ring, like honestly, fine. Like if it's yeah. for you, fine.
Exactly.
I would really advise that if you feel an inkling of anything, even down to if it's just a little tiny bit of your intuition telling you that something is off, listen to that, because it'll get louder or it'll get quieter. Yeah. And you will get so used to shutting it down that it'll stop talking and you don't want to get to that point. And so the last thing, if you're okay with ending on this, do we want to just give a brief purity culture in 2022? What to look for?
2023.
Oh my God. 2023.
Yeah. 2023. Culture in 2023. Like just barely. Yeah, just barely. Barely.
8 days in. It's fine.
Yeah. Yes. So I did a post recently about this, and I feel like there's already some stuff that's outdated because they're changing stuff up. So one of the biggest things that like purity culture looks like modern purity culture, like purity culture 2.0, is they took out the metaphors, like they took out the object lessons. Most of them, and like I'm thinking of like a few creators in particular, will always start off by saying, I know a lot of people were harmed by purity culture, and you know, they did it in a really fear-based way. And so we're here to tell you why purity is still important. And so it like, and I'm with you, like the biggest pushback I get is people being like, well, how dare you tell me that I can't wait until marriage? I'm like, I don't really care. Like if you're having sex or not, I don't. If you want to do it, go for it. If you don't, okay, cool. Like as long as you have your own reasons, that's fine. But they like all of these creators always take out the obviously harmful language. Like they take out the, you are a used piece of tape, you are a used up rose, like all that kind of stuff. But there is still a huge emphasis on virginity. Mm-hmm. There's still an emphasis on saying God's design for marriage. Like that's kind of a big phrase that they use now. There is weirdly now more of an emphasis on trying to destigmatize sex. And so you have all these creators that are like, I'm going to talk about sex now that I'm married. Yep. I'm going to make this huge shift into
sex
content.
Sex is good.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. But it's for marriage. Yes. There's parameters around it. There's like, it's only heterosexual. It's only for marriage.
Yeah. For straight married people.
And it's all the time. And so like, it's this weird, I don't know. It's still the same message, but there's different sounding rules around it. And then the other big thing is like, it thrives on medical and scientific misinformation. So it uses a lot of like, a lot of these creators will use statistics that were found by Focus on the Family or statistics that were found by crisis pregnancy centers and which like don't use real medical or scientific information. And a lot of them,
James Dobson.
Oh, don't even get me started. I have a lot against James Dobson.
He haunts us.
He always does. He always does. Ugh. But yeah, all of these creators do the same thing, and they make it look really aesthetically pleasing, and they use the really pretty fonts, and they like, it looks like something that you could scroll by and be like, okay, and like not really look into it. But then when you actually hear them talk about it, they also do that thing that a lot of mega churches do where they're not ever like forthcoming about what they actually believe. Mm-hmm. So even if people ask them directly, like, do you, you know, believe in gay marriage or do you believe in anything like that? They're like, well, God's design for marriage is between
or I
one
love
man
all
and one
people.
Woman. Yes, I love all people, but like, this is what God says, and that, and we're just supposed to live by the Bible. And it's a very like, weirdly now, there is more of an emphasis on like judging other people who don't subscribe to like their belief
I think
system.
I think they gave up the pretending that they didn't judge thing. I think that got abandoned.
Yes, they very openly judge. It's like way more openly homophobic and transphobic, like incredibly openly. And it's this weird, like it's the like hate the sin, love the sinner kind of thing of like, I'm doing this because we care about you and we just want you to like be better. And but that's what a lot of these creators that do a lot of purity culture like 2.0 stuff, it all sounds exactly the same.
Yeah.
And it always ends with like, but God designed marriage or sex between one man and one woman. And so that's what we
the
live
font
by
is
and that's
just
what,
different
literally like
yeah.
And it's with a lot of like flowery words that don't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Or it's on TikTok.
I noticed I wanted to talk about this because I saw your post. I saw the when you were talking about 2022. Yeah. And then I got a comment very soon after on a video that I made about purity culture saying that purity culture is harmful and that their church doesn't practice it, and echoing that it was fear-based. And then went on to explain that they didn't use the word soul tie because I think that word also got abandoned.
That word is also,
But they were saying it binds you. So instead of soul tie now, it's, there was a language about
a bond.
A bond, a, that it, you're bound to the people you have sex with. And they said it's just sex is really important and like kind of shifted the language a little bit. And I, it set off a red flag for me right away where I was like, oh, y'all are learning. We've adjusted because this
they
was,
are.
There was a, this went up in flames and you're now doing a PR scramble trying to fix the language so that you can still get the message across. And I, it was immediately, that's it was so, like. It was so transparent to me that I was just like, wow, I can see right through this. But boy, oh boy, is this smart marketing. Like this is smart.
Because they always start off by saying, like, we understand that, like, purity culture, you were harmed by purity culture, and that's not what we're promoting. Yeah, we're not promoting bad purity culture.
Yeah, it's validating dagger validation.
Yes,
they do literally. Their, like, sandwich, like, criticism technique, which is smart. It's fucking smart. And that's the thing is, I think that a lot of the times people will view Christians as 2020 MAGA Trump people breaking into the Capitol. And in my opinion,
there's a lot of those.
There are. And in my opinion, that side of it, you're dumb. I just think it's stupid. Like, I think those are not a lot of intelligent people, in my opinion. However, I think the thing that is the hiccup is you look at mega churches that are multi-millionaire businesses. You don't get there without some intelligence and some good business like practices and some good marketing. And so it makes sense that if you look at it from an objective perspective, not from a religious perspective of this is a business who had a bad PR scandal and is now doing PR rehab, it's easier to disconnect it and not look at it like, oh, they've changed. It's like, no. This is a PR rehab project. They are trying to fix their marketing and make this more marketable because it's become outdated. Has nothing to do with the values changing whatsoever. And I think the other thing that's the hiccup that I've noticed as well, the sex thing is really problematic because I think that they're talking about sex more, which would make it seem like it's okay and sex ed is okay, but then there's the parameters and it's confusing.
But there's also like a demonization of comprehensive sex ed. Like they don't want, they don't want kids to learn about sex or who they deem as kids.
The sex ed bills have been shot down big time.
Yeah. They don't want high schoolers to learn about sex, but they do want you to learn about sex once you're married.
Which, like, at least I'm glad that we're like at least something. Where we've moved a little bit forward there, because at least now we're teaching married people how to have sex.
But even then, there's still like, there's one couple in particular that they were talking about, like the, like how they basically like got sex ed, like right before they got married. And even then they were saying like, but be careful with what you're, with your research. Like you don't want to get like Cosmo or, so there's still like a, go to these particular books and learn like the mechanics, and then also learn like, get like the books like Sheet Music and like Every Woman's Battle
and how to do it from like a biblical perspective, because biblical perspective aspect is the, your husband is above you, you are serving him, and so your sex ed is still inherently misogynistic and inherently abusive. So it's not it's not like, it's sex ed. It's not good sex ed. Maybe we got, maybe we learned what a vulva was, which thank the Lord.
Yeah, exactly.
But we didn't get to the, let's not let our husbands abuse us. So like, one step forward, three steps back. And I think the other thing that's really important to note as well, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, but just as a warning to everyone, the church is doing a PR rehab period. Deconstruction 100%. Has entered the scene. People, the church knows that we're talking about deconstruction. They know that that has become a mainstream topic, that religious trauma is a hashtag that has millions of videos now, and they are aware. And if you hear a church preaching a sermon on deconstruction, have your like evaluating lens on and your critical thinking lens on. Don't just suck that all in, because it often is the narrative of, they've now switched it where it used to be
a doubting Thomas was used
as doubts. Like, yeah.
Yeah. It used to be like a warning and like, you don't want to be a doubting Thomas. And it was used as
lukewarm.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. Fuck the fucking word. Lukewarm.
So sorry.
No, it's fine. No, that's just, it's one of those things.
Brought it all back.
It's one of those things where doubting was a label that was put on you that was bad. And now they've realized that doesn't work. And so now they've shifted to, well, you can deconstruct. We want you to deconstruct. We want you to think at your faith, look at your faith and look at how you're like, we don't want you to just be parrots. We want you to think about your faith.
Yeah.
And then we want you to reconstruct within your faith.
Yeah. And within this particular set of parameters.
Yep. And so
like, I can't reconstruct without also leaving out all the other stuff that they want you to leave out.
Yeah. And so I guess what we're saying, the thing that's becoming clear just right now is there's just the parameters are what is the problem. I think anytime that someone says, here's an inch of free will, but it's within parameters, your radar should go up. You should start evaluating that. And I would just encourage people that if they would like to do that education, that research, to do it from non-religious sources. Because I think that anytime you are in an environment that is very closed off, and then all of the resources that you get are within that environment, you have no access to the outside world. And that's when it gets really culty. That includes, like, don't go to the therapist at your church.
Yeah.
Don't go to the counselor, quote unquote, at your church. Go to an actual licensed therapist.
Yeah.
Because you're just making your environment smaller and smaller and smaller. And that's when, like, from a logistics perspective, you're in a cult. Like, logistically.
When you're not allowed to have any other interests outside of Jesus.
Yeah.
Which, like, that, I mean, up until a few years ago, I was like, anytime I would have an interest that was not Jesus, it was always like, but how can you use this for the Lord?
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, it's only been in the past like 3 or 4 years that I've been like, what do I actually like and not like? Yeah. Like, what kinds of like books do I like? What kind of hobbies do I like? And like, I'm knitting and I don't have to knit a blanket for Jesus. Like, I can knit a blanket for myself and it can just be because it keeps my hands busy. Like, it doesn't have to be like for Jesus.
Yeah. No. And the funny thing about that is, we did a lot of trauma talk last month, and that was the one thing that kept coming up was like relearning what you like and what you don't like, and relearning yourself and relearning your intuition. Yeah. And the really funny thing about that is like a telltale sign that you've been in an abusive relationship. Is when you get out of the abusive relationship and you realize you don't have any likes or dislikes that didn't involve your relationship.
Yep.
And so once again, I would just really encourage anybody who's like, even if you're listening to this and you're pissed off and you're like, that's not how my church is. Just like take a peek.
Cool. Great.
And
awesome.
Because I think that when you look at it from a more objective as you can get, because it's hard to say looking at it from an objective lens when all you know is church, because it's not, then you're inherently, your life is not objective. It's very like, it's very internal. You just keep looking inwards towards the church. But I think the second that I was able to get some perspective and zoom out a little bit and see, hey, all of these things that are happening, if I were to see them happening to someone that was just in a relationship with a man, I would say, hey, girlfriend, get out of that.
Yeah.
And when I look at it from the church, for some reason it was normalized. And so I think if you can, if you can find any way to zoom out and think of it as, if I saw my friend in this dynamic with another friend or with a job, if their job never let them read any literature that didn't involve their job, like, would I think that's weird?
Yeah.
So if you can find any way to zoom out a little bit, I would encourage that. I also, once again, know that's a really big ask if you're in that shut off, closed off environment. Yeah. That's a hard thing to say, like, hey, get some perspective, because sometimes you can't.
Yeah.
But if you're able to, or you have the capacity to, I would really suggest that.
Even if it's just like following one Instagram account or following, like, reading one book, like, even because reading like Linda K. Klein's book Pure was part of what made me realize that like purity culture was not just something just my church did.
Mm-hmm.
And it impacted so many people, and it was widely bad. Like, it was so helpful in being like, oh, there's a bigger world out there, and there's a lot of people being impacted by this, and that's a problem. Like, that's something that we like need to talk about. And that opened the door for like a lot of other books and all that kind of stuff to figure stuff out.
No, for me, it was Girl Boner, and then 3 weeks later I bought The Purity Myth.
by Jessica Valenti. That's like, awesome. Really soon after, I was like, hey.
Yeah.
And I think I Googled, when I found Girl Boner, I just wanted to have sex. And so I Googled, like, books about sex. And it just so happened that the book that came up that, like, was, the other ones were, like, Come As You Are, which had, like, a more, like,
it's very
vaginal cover art, and so that scared me a little bit. Like, that was, like, too much for me. And then there was, like, Get Clitorate, which had clit in the title, and I was like, which, by the way, if you guys are looking for, I had Dr. Lori Vince, who wrote
Get Clitorate
on the podcast on episode 3, and she's great. But I was like, that's too much. And then there was, like, more that were, like, sex, 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 and I was like,
yeah.
And then I saw August, and it said, like, Girl Boner, Good Girl's Guide, and I was like, I'm a good girl.
I'm
like,
a good girl.
Like, one. Yeah. And so, it's amazing how quickly the snowball can start rolling if you kind of take one step out of your little circle of Jesus and you take a step out into the wild.
My therapist was the one that recommended Come As You Are to me. And she even said, because she knew I was, like, freaked out. And she was like, don't look at the cover. Get the audiobook. And that way you don't have to look at the cover because it's going to freak you out. And she was like, but just, she was like, just listen to the information. And then, like, I was listening to it, like, on the way home from therapy. And I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know any of this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was me too. Like, Come As You Are freaked me out at first because I was like, a vagina. Like,
it's so good,
then,
though.
Like, fast forward, like, 2 years and, like, I have.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I have a boob pencil holder sitting on the desk across the room.
It's a slippery slope.
Yeah. They were warning us. It's true.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, thank you so much for coming on. Obviously, I think we have,
thanks for having me.
We could talk about this for hours and hours and hours and hours because it literally never ends. There's so much to get into.
Yeah.
But I want to give people the chance to find you because your content was one of the one of the places where I started to educate myself on purity culture. And so I want to make sure that people are able to find you because I think you dive into so many aspects of purity culture from a really holistic and, like, intersectional lens where it's not just looking at the sex part and it's not just looking at the misogyny part, but it's also looking at, like, the I think you had a post that, like, went into the ableism of it a little bit, or you had something that went into some of the
one about, like, white like nationalism.
Yeah.
And James Dobson and all that kind of stuff.
It goes into different aspects. Yeah, no, really. And I think the intersectional, like, holistic lens is really important to zoom out and see how, ooh, my purity culture is connected to all these different problematic roots. So do you want to give some information on where people can find you and learn more from you?
Yes, I'm pretty much only on Instagram for purity culture stuff at Deconstructing Purity Culture. And in my bio, I have, like, a link tree with other, like, podcast episodes that I've been on, and then Megan Shantz and I are about to read, we read Captivating and, like, tore it to pieces, and it took, like, 4 or 5 episodes, and we're about to read which one is it, I think Every Woman's Battle, and also tear that one to pieces, so that will be coming soon. But it's, I'm mainly just, like, on Instagram, and I have a day job, so I'm on there. That's pretty much the only place.
Yeah. No, I love the idea of, like, unpacking Christian books, and, like,
it's a fun time. It's a horrifying time, but it's fun.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting to go back and read. I threw away all my books because I didn't want them in my house. I also threw away my Bible, which I was like, sorry. But I've said this before on the podcast, but I had, like, Stephen Furtick's book, and I had Judah Smith's book, and I had Anxious for Nothing by Max Lucado. And
I remember that one.
I just was talking about this. I had Made to Crave by Lisa Turkhurst.
Yes.
Which is,
oh my gosh,
so fucking traumatic. That is an eating disorder in a book. Like, it is so bad. And I was going through.
I justified my eating disorder.
Oh, I did too. I did too.
It's for Jesus.
I did too. I was like, I'm not eating because I'm craving Jesus. And Lisa Turkhurst told me to.
Yeah, she told me, and she's a reputable woman.
Yeah, she told me. And so I didn't even donate them. I threw them all away. I was like, no one needs this. Yeah, I'm not donating this.
I'm not going to give these to anybody.
Does it need these? I'm not going to traumatize anybody else. Well, thank you so much for coming on and taking the time. I'd love to have you back on so we can dive more into the other fucking 20 points of this outline that we
did. I know, I was going to say. There's so much.
Yeah, there's a lot. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's all the time that we have for today. Thank you guys so much for listening and for diving into Deconstruction January with us. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please rate us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify and leave us a review. You can also follow the blog on Instagram at Serafina Blog and visit us online at serafinablog.com. And you can follow us on TikTok at Mindful Minds Podcast and online at mindfulmindspod.com. You can also find my deconstruction content on TikTok at Fina_Bina, FINA_BINA. And as always, to end our time, unclench your jaw, take a deep breath. And remember, you can always learn, you can always grow, and you can always choose to live your life in a more mindful way. I will chat with you guys in 2 weeks.